Welcome to NAESP's Bonus Members Webinar. Today is Wednesday, February the 27th, 2019. My name is Aaron Lurie, and I am the Director of Professional Learning here at NAESP. Today, everyone has come into the webinar muted. So if you have any questions, we want to put your questions into the chat box today for our speaker. Our speaker today is the CEO and founder of Austin Future Schools, which is a leading Danish consultancy dedicated to reimagining education and creating schools of the future. Lena, how are you today?
Hi, thanks. I'm good.
NAESP webinar, bonus webinar for our members today.
I'm so excited to be part of this. So thank you very much for having me, inviting me to do this webinar.
Well, tell us a little bit more about yourself. Tell the NAESP universe more about yourself.
Yeah, so my name is Lena, and you might detect a strange little accent and maybe some like language that's a bit off every now and then. I try to do my best. I am from Denmark, so that's the reason why, and I hope you will bear with me. But I trust you, like, you will prefer this to Danish. So, back in 2005, I founded a company called Autens to be able to work with schools and learning and see how we can continuously change for the better and better to create as many opportunities we can for young people. And just to give you an idea of what we do, we work across like a whole spectrum of things. So we look at what could a vision for learning be in the future? What could a vision for a school be or a whole school district? We try to facilitate change. We train teachers. We do a lot of PBL training. And we get involved in a lot of school building projects, refurbishments, new schools, to do the whole initial planning and idea phase, involve people in it, teachers, students, parents. And then we design learning spaces mostly with teachers and students, and sometimes we do it depends on how we do it, but we do a lot of those projects, and that's what I'm here to share a bit about. Across it all, we also collaborate with schools across the world. So just to also introduce this part of our work, I lead an organization called Global Schools Alliance, which is a family of schools that has sort of a shared mindset and shared understanding of shared philosophy around learning. And I've put my own little picture in the middle of that so you can see where I am. That's roughly where Denmark is. So, and we can get back to a little bit more about Denmark, because I think there's probably a lot of cultural stuff that also comes out in this. So, yeah. And let's get started. I'm going to talk about how we can create physical spaces for innovative learning, a big topic. And I'm going to try and zoom in on the important bits and pieces that you can do in schools as principals or have your teachers work on. Just before we start, those of you who are here, I just want to get a feel for, like, have you already been part of designing a new school or maybe designing a classroom? I'll just we have a poll coming up here. So you can press 1 if you've been part of building a whole new school. Maybe you've modernized the school instead or rebuilt it, redesigned it. Then you press 2. And choice number 3 is if you've redesigned or designed a larger learning space. And choice number 4 is if you've had a chance to redesign a classroom. Or maybe none of these, or something that I haven't thought of, and then you press 5. So let's see what we have here.
So we have the poll going right now. If you would go ahead and click your responses, that would be great. We'll close the poll in a few seconds here. If you could get your responses in. I think people are thinking about that. Okay, I will end the polling right now. So, Lena, I don't know if you can see the answers, but it looks like 100% said the other or none. So people are really new to this.
Yes. All right. So let's get started. Yeah, I can see the results now. Thank you very much. Let's get started. So just to share what we will be going through, I'll start out with some background on learning spaces, kind of a framework for thinking. Then I'll go through the design process of learning spaces. We call it the four Fs. By the end, I'll go through how this might look in a regular school that doesn't have a particularly large amount of money to do this. So that's the plan. And feel free to chat with each other as we go and share ideas or even questions. We will have a short question session at the end, but we can also do some as we go. So as a background, when we look at learning space design, we use different perspectives that we sort of triangulate. So we look at what narrative are we trying to communicate here? How does this space make you feel? What does it share about your learning philosophy and what is expected of you? So that's one piece, looking at it as a narrative. The next bit is looking at the spaces as a technology for learning. So it's basically looking at what kind of functions do we need to make it work, to make learning and teaching and learning really work in our space for the people who use it. And in that way, we can always use it as something that will help us take those next steps when we develop our pedagogical practice in our schools. When we work with learning space design this way, it becomes an integral part of developing your school, your thinking, your learning, and the whole quality of the learning experience for students. And a very central piece in the way we think is to not look at the physical design to begin with, because that's a consequence of a few other things that are really important. We always start with what you can see here on the screen in the middle. Look at the vision for learning. What's your learning philosophy? What do you believe to be true about learning? And get that sorted with your whole staff, and then look at what learning activities do you wish to see in your school. How should teaching and learning look when you open the door to the school? And the next bit is, if you go down to the right side of the triangle, is like, who's working with who? Are you, do you have a lot of like smaller groups working together? Is it classes or a broader spectrum of different groups that will be working together? And when you get all of that sorted, you sort of have the strategic framework to start thinking about your design. So this is a very central bit about the thinking here. And since it's not about learning space design as such, it's really about learning and what that looks like in a physical shape and form. It makes it really important to actually look at what is learning and what do we know about really powerful learning experiences. And I've tried to make this little collage here to communicate in one little slide a lot of research from neurology, psychology, learning, what have you. So what do we know? So if we can create experiences that are joyful, meaningful, and engaging, we're in the flow zone. That's where the brain really, like, it works super fast. You learn super fast. You enjoy it. You forget everything around you. And that little sort of sweet spot is different from person to person. So it's not like, it's not the same thing from student to student. Also, on the right-hand side of the slide, you see different, like you see ears, hands, just to remind ourselves that we are not brains on a stick. We're real people, and we need to get, the more we get engaged physically with learning, the more we also use our hands, the better we learn, and we have like sort of more channels to learn through. And the more we can make it active and experimental, and where we can get our hands and ourselves interacting with the physical world, the stronger the learning experience will be. So it's important, in my opinion, we design to really cater to this. Also, I put positive emotions and strong, good relations. It's really important that we create spaces that nurture, like help friendships grow, where people feel safe, where they feel welcomed, so because it's part of making our brain wide open to learning. So that's sort of the like a very quick walkthrough of the learning base. So what is it then that we have to learn? Everybody's talking about how the world is changing really fast. And it is. And wherever I go in the world and whichever, wherever we look, the thing we talk about is how schools can help young people really not just learn knowledge. They need to learn skills and competencies, and they need to be able to put things into action. They need to learn to collaborate. They need to be really creative. They need to be good at using their imagination, critical thinking, communicating, and really collaborating across cultures. These are also, according to OECD and their head of education and learning, these are what we call or consider the new hard skills. These are truly important. They're not new skills, but it's crucial that every child and young person really becomes very competent when we look at this. So this is also a thing we need to have in our schools. And I just put up the Sustainable Development Goals here just as an example of some of the really difficult things that we need to educate our children to be able to solve and deal with as they grow up, and also in our schools today. They need to be innovators. They need to be change makers. And they need to solve problems that we don't know the answer to. So many schools that we meet, most schools, of course, have a mission or a vision, and many of them say it's like, we aim to educate today's learners for the world of tomorrow. It's about innovation, being compassionate. Sorry, there's a spelling error there. Compassionate change makers, leaders, global citizens, and really be good at creativity, innovation, and entrepreneurship. So what does this look like in our schools? Well, many schools look like this. This is where we educate our little change makers. And a good theoretical framework that we use here is about cultural, it's about how we can analyze learning spaces. And it's from organizational culture. So look at the artifacts. They will describe something about what is expected of you here, the norms, what would you do in this space? And all of that reveals some basic assumptions about learning. So this space basically tells you to please sit down. It tells you that we expect of you to be quiet, speak only when asked, do what you're told. And the basic assumptions here are that everybody learns in the same way. And thus, the spaces here actually communicate, and they help shape a learning culture, whether you like it or not. So it's very important to be aware of your basic assumptions and how it flows through in your learning space design. So just also for all of you maybe in the chat, have a think about your school and what the learning culture you would like to promote looks like. What do you want students to feel about? Like, what does learning look like? What do you expect them to do? How do you want them to behave as learners? So you can feel free and chat here. And as we have a changing landscape of learning, going from a much like teacher-led industrial age system, and moving towards a much more student-led system where students might be working on different things at different times, we need to create spaces for that. So what I'm going to share here in the next session, a section of my presentation, is what we call the four Fs of learning space design: families, function, feeling, and facilitation. So I'll go through each of them with some examples. And just important, you need to have worked out your learning philosophy before moving into this. So just a second, just putting my things up here. Good. So the first that I call families here, it's basically looking at who are your learning, your communities of learning, who needs to work together. Your class is a classes, grade levels, so it's the immediate family, who's the extended family. And the whole idea here is that if you haven't already put them near each other, you might need to reorganize who's where in your school to get everybody really close together so you can make you can really use that, like family, the extended family also to help improve learning. So in many schools, we see they have classrooms. That's a thing that's puzzled me ever since I started working with schools. That one classroom looks like the next classroom, etc. Every door I open is the same. But sometimes it may make sense to have different groups, different classes working together and then making use of the whole space that you can then free up. And the classrooms doesn't have to look like each other. So they could be different, if that makes sense to you. And there's no right or wrong here. It depends on the way learning should happen in your school. And just sharing briefly from a Swedish school here. Here they have chosen to not have a bunch of identical classrooms. Instead, they have learning communities or learning hubs for three classes at the same time. So here they get the grade levels together. So it's in each corner of the building. You have three classes, roughly 75 children. And if you look at their space, they have some rooms that they can close off. They have bigger rooms, smaller rooms. They have breakout spaces, and they have the teachers' rooms nearby. So just an example of how it's important that we first start out organizing the spaces in a way that makes sense to us and help us. So here, just a few pictures from the school. It enables a very, very varied learning environment for different functions, different ways of working, even small group rooms, and doesn't take up more space than a traditional classroom school would do, but something has to go if you want to do it this way. Another example, it's from New Zealand. We work with a lot of schools in New Zealand we are very inspired by as well. And they work with learning hubs. And if you want public money invested in your school, you're rebuilding or building a new school, you are required to create what they call innovative learning environments. And it's basically a big hub for instance, 75 kids with a lot of different choices and ways to work. So they've sort of, it's not like everybody doing the same thing at the same time, but very flexible and very much like also we see modern workplaces work. So that was the first F, families. So just one, the takeaway here is that you want to keep your families together, and we're talking about learning communities here. So let's move on to functions. That's the next F. And the main question here is, what do you need to be able to do in your learning space? Do you need to, typically you need to be able to instruct or present something to the students? The students would need to collaborate. Do you need to build, experiment, listen, or just sort of find a moment for some peace and quiet? And also it's here you look at what kind of furniture would best support that function. So let's look at that. And before we go into that, that's where you can actually learn a lot from the students. I always enjoy when I walk into a new school to take a look at what are the students doing when teachers are not telling them what to do. Sort of, so that could be recess or it could be like any given time. But just have a look at how they use the spaces, because they often identify places that you wouldn't do yourself. So I have just a few pictures to share here. So here, a couple of kids who found their own little group room, where they can collaborate and help each other solve some of assignments that they have, and be away from the bigger group. Here's an example. These are older kids in a space that's set up with lots of tables and stools and chairs. But what they prefer to do here, because they have a choice, is to sort of more be lying down, be very close together, and really it's a social experience while they are learning. So, and we see this with teenagers a lot, that this is much more interesting for them if we can create environments that look like this instead of having them sit at each their stool, on each their stool at a desk or chair. Here it's, I think these kids are 5, 6 years old, and I walked into this classroom and had a look, and it was filled with desks and these stools, and only two of the kids were using any like sitting device, if you could say that. There's a boy by the window who's looking out at the class, and then there's one standing up in an armchair. There's a girl sitting down as well. She works there. She's a teaching assistant. But it seems that here all the tables and stools are actually in the way of the way kids naturally want to learn while they move around and maybe lie down on the floor. So, and they can use a table standing up. That's pretty fine. But it seems that we are also preventing something for them here. And we've actually, like, we do a lot of learning space design, which is basically why I'm here. I think the most interesting bit of our work is when we design with teachers and with students so that it can become a tool for teachers, a didactic tool. And we've designed schools with at least 2,000-3,000 teachers, and have a pretty good idea about, like, what is it that they are telling us they need, both teachers and students. So I'll go through some of the key points here, and you can test out in your schools whether this is the same thing. These things I'm showing you is sort of from all across Europe. So it would be interesting to hear how that would play out in your context, but I think it might be pretty universal. So these are just examples from workshops we've done. We actually work very sort of hands-on to create physical models of spaces they might design. So one key message is that we create spaces that have large variety so that they have a lot of choice and that they seem attractive, welcoming, and also playful to some extent. So the choice and that trust that goes with that, and students being able to take responsibility for their own learning is really, really important. And also that when they get up, they don't disturb anybody because it's just a natural flow around that space.
Elena, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
I'm looking at these spaces and these phenomenal pictures. And what's the capacity for a learning space like this? How many students can be in a learning space of this sort?
Of this sort, you can see here, this is actually the size of a little bit more than a classroom. So you cannot see the other part of the room, but I might have, I don't know if people can see me as well. There's what you can't see is the other end of the room has a staircase like this where they can get 80 kids together. I think they have around 60 kids in this space. So it's basically two classrooms that are put together and then you create a lot of small rooms within that space. So we don't need, that's like a very clear message from students. They don't all need a desk and a chair at the same time. They are actually much happier being able to use other kinds of spaces. So we have way too many desks and chairs in schools, if you ask my opinion. I hope that was an answer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. And if we move on, another thing, it really follows from what I just said here, that if you can create spaces within spaces, like small rooms, again, to increase the variety, and you have that, you feel you're together, like with a small group, you have a more intimate discussion. You are much more able to sort of keep, like, stay focused. So that's really helpful for students, and you can have the variety you need. And it's so important that we can move around and not have to sit still, like, almost all day. That's really helpful. So just like another picture here to sort of remind us that learning is social. So to have other people to interact with and to be able also to move and make yourself comfortable is really important. Another piece is places to hide. We usually say that whenever there's a crack in a school building and the children are allowed to use the school in the ways they want, we find a kid there. So if you have just like a little, this little space, cave, nooks, hiding places, children can really benefit from those. So you can design these like on purpose, or you can maybe just like remove a storage piece of furniture and create a little piece of air where they can crawl behind it just so that it doesn't, like, it should not fall over on them. But just think about how you can create lots of small rooms and hiding places for kids. Because they wanna stay, like, be just one, two, three kids together. It's really helpful when, if they're reading, for instance, or other things where they really need to focus. And another message is to make all spaces learning spaces. So a lot of schools here in my country, I'd say that most schools have maybe 15 to 20% of their space that's not being used for anything other than cleaning and walking on. So it's hallways and things like that. This is an example of how you can make use of a hallway. It's typically a very quiet place, so you can maybe get a lot done. And here you have sort of a hiding thing, like a little cave space for some students to sit there and focus. And on the wall, you can see some there's these carpets that are put up for students to just take them down and find a place that they really like and enjoy and can make their own little space. Because there's a lot of spaces in our schools that's not really being used that we can activate in this way. So that's like, take a look at your schools when you go back tomorrow, or if you are still, I guess you might be in your schools today. Still, it's dark here. That's why I kind of forgot. It's nighttime. But have a look around your school and find all the little spaces you're not using today that you might be able to activate pretty easily. So when we design and we involve students and teachers, what we end up with is actually we design with purpose for these like four things, the green bubbles. We want to design like for a good place to present, to sort of give brief instructions and have assemblies and class discussions. We'd want to design for several places where kids can find some peace and quiet and get away from the whole group and just focus. We want to create really good collaboration spaces where you can do projects, work with innovation, and just collaborate. And we also want to make it easy to access creative production so that you can really also do something with your hands and also like take the knowledge you have and put it into practice somehow. So these are the main zones where schools used to be that top green bubble with the sort of teaching space that was the space was set up for that. Primarily, like maybe, and then all the other things would just have to sort of find its way. But we need to create and design spaces that are much more balanced when it comes to these things. And then on the side, I've put things you also want to remember. A lot of exhibition of student work and things that are maybe like from subjects or things that can inspire students. You want students to be able to express themselves in different ways. So you might have many places where they can write or do things or exhibit again. You want to also encourage a bit of movement and play. It's good for the brain, and it's fun. It encourages flow, and we need a brain break every now and then. And then the last little bit is you want to design for well-being and sense of belonging. And I'll go further into this. So this is just an example of some of the things that teachers and students create when we run workshops with them. We have something we call the Learning Space Design Lab with all, you know, all this stuff. And it's really an easy way for students and teachers to express what learning should look like for them.
Lena, before you go on, I have a question about, is safety ever an issue when dealing with private places where teachers cannot see students in front of them?
In my country, it's not. If we go to the UK, it is. There are ways around that. We do trust the children a lot here. And they are very young, they're trusted to do all sorts of things, which also means that they take responsibility for themselves in a very good and constructive way. But if your children did not learn that from when they were very young, it's of course, you need to find that balance where it works. And it's also, you need to have different arrangements with different students. For some, it's fine that they make use of like the whole space and every little thing in it. And for others, you would have that conversation with, you know, where do you, like, you need to stay here or there, that works for you, or like you can, it's basically having students getting to know themselves well as learners, but there's also, you might be implying a behavior issue as well. So it's just maybe different rules for different students that you have.
Great. Thank you.
I hope that answered the thing. So many teachers we meet, they say, hey, we have classrooms that look like this. I have no chance of doing anything here. I have no space. I need more room. But this is the same space, just other things in it, more space freed up on the floor So it's more about what you do with the space and how you use it than the size of the space you have. So this is an example of a new classroom here in Denmark, not the one that we designed, but it's, you cannot, like the two, there are two cave spaces, and on the other side of that, you have a staircase seating, amphi seating, or tiered seating. There's a niche, like, or a nook, in the back where students can climb up and lie down, and just different places for them to work, as they have different needs. So, a very important thing to say here, it's not about always being able to buy stuff. It's how you find like different zones in your room, or also maybe look at across several rooms. It's how you use them. It's what you allow the students to do, and maybe different arrangements for different students. And it's also about what you take out, because there are often too many desks and too many chairs in a space, and kids really like to have space to move around. So that was the...
Yeah. I have another question on that as far as funding goes. What kinds of, you know, how do you fund all of these things in terms of getting programs or grants that will fund the learning spaces? You know, do you have any issue with that or...
So the different projects, we do have different models, but like many of them, it might be the school district that decided to invest in this, because learning is changing and it's not really working for schools here anymore with just that sort of church bench seating. So it's really needed. It can also be the school investing in it. And sometimes we work with teachers who have no money at all. And I'm going to show you an example of that later. So it depends also on your culture and how you're like, how engaged your teachers are in the change. If they really want it, they are able to make change on a very low budget, and maybe just what they can like find in your basement that you have to put away, or like things like that. Have parents bring in stuff that you ask for, something like that. It's something you can do. And, I think that's so important that we are able to do something, like we are able to act, but it's basically more of a, if you really want to do it, you can do it. And if you're not particularly excited about it, it's not going to happen if you don't
have
money. So yeah,
that's great. Thank you.
So just to sort of round up the functions part, the second F is that you want to really design your spaces purposefully and well balanced in terms of functions. And you need some parts that are really flexible and some very focused. Just going back one slide, I put the Swiss Army knife here for that reason. You basically want spaces that work as a Swiss Army knife, and a really good didactic tool for you as a teacher. So let's move on to the next little F. I call it feeling. It has to like be F words, all of them, so it's easy to remember. So this is basically about what kind of atmosphere are you trying to create? What do you want students to feel when they walk into the space? How do you want them to feel about themselves? How do you want your teachers to feel? Because spaces will do something to us in terms of how we feel, whether we feel comfortable, welcome, and all of that. So let's have a look. Here, it's very important to have that a sense of openness, but also the opposite, actually, that you can find a place where you can be more private. And it's very important that you have the sense of like feeling cared for. So this is a space we designed at school here in Denmark where we really wanted to get those armchairs in to show the students, the care that they can use things that are normally reserved for adults, in the school. We wanted to create spaces that were really nice for them. And this is a combined like workspace for different classes and library and different stuff at the same time. So to make good use of the space. The next piece is very important. It really does something good to us. If we can bring in elements of nature, it can be plants, it can even be trees, and it can also be murals, like a wall, like a photo wall of nature, because our brain, like we are ready to take that for nature as well. We are easy to cheat that way. And it can also like just be the use of wood, things, natural materials, and also daylight, so important. So these things actually sort of will get our shoulders down, we relax more, and you can actually measure this in the blood that, like, we feel more relaxed and safe, and it creates a more calm environment. So that's a thing that I really want to, like, you know, say, hey, this is important. It does something great. So just a few examples of what this could look like. And these, it is a classroom. Another thing is to really make students feel welcome and at home in a space. Also have them help create the space, change it every now and then, talk about what it should look like. And here an example of also how you can really help build the space and make it something meaningful and relevant to their learning at the time, so it becomes theirs. And then I have a piece here. It's the hygge part. It's a Danish word that I'm like, if you don't know it yet, I'll introduce it to you. Denmark is, it used to be number one, but now it's top two, three, the happiest nation in the world. And there might be several reasons for this. Maybe low expectations of life. I don't know. No, but we are basically very, like, we live in a good place. And we have a thing called hygge, which means basically getting together, having a good time, really sort of forgetting everything around you and focusing on being with the people you are around there. So it's also to create environments that really support that sense of well-being. So just an example here that's also created for students to get together in small groups and really feel that they have dear friends and they're important as a person. So here also to sum up what it is that we mean with the third F, feelings, that we want, like, you would want your students and teachers to really feel safe, respected, and that they belong. The last F we've called facilitation, and this is looking at little tips and tricks and tweaks you can do in your space, typically at a very low cost. You can also create, like, you can also find expensive solutions, of course, but typically you can find, like, playful solutions that the students can maybe do themselves. So it's looking at which sort of micro tools you can use in your space to strengthen your learning culture and your learning philosophy and help students learn better. And how can you help your students personalize their learning experience more so that it really caters to the way they like to learn? So one thing is, like, take a look at the surfaces you have around you. This is an expensive solution, but it can also be done in a very cheap way. Here students are, instead of, like, that's the main staircase of a new school building here in Denmark, where I've taken the stairs, I've got to admit. But it's so popular and the students are, like, they get these small brain breaks, and you can do a lot of things also with math and stuff, like subject things that you, where you can incorporate learning and have children do a lot of things. Here's another example of how you can use the floor for learning the letters and math, or maybe table.
Can I ask a quick question in here, Alina? For some of these spaces, are these part of the classroom, or are you giving them breaks where they run out and go into?
We are.
How do you incorporate both, the curriculum?
Both, actually. So it's this example here is a space that's just outside a bunch of classrooms. So it's meant to be part of the learning. It's meant, like, the classroom door is not meant to stay closed during a lesson. So it's meant for you to maybe, as a teacher, take out a class here and then do something active exercises here where you use whatever you have there. And just this next example on the right-hand side, you can see a very cheap example of something created by students, like learning to count. You jump as you learn the numbers. So it's meant as something that would help support learning. So you use it with your sort of, that's how you, part of how you teach the curriculum.
And how many students generally are in your classes? How many are?
It can be up to 28. Here, and you're actually required by by law here to incorporate movement, physical movement, into subject teaching. So children are actually meant, like, it can play out in many different ways, but we expect schools to make sure that children move at least 45 minutes a day, and a lot of it as part of learning, not just PE, but also on a broader spectrum. because it makes learning more interesting and fun, and you get into the flow zone, and it's easier to remember. And for some students, it's so helpful to remember things. There's a student once I met, like, he could not, like, there's this historical thing. He could only remember when he was also dancing at the same time. So it's really short with his movements. So, and we don't make enough use of that in schools, but we're trying to develop a lot of things here in, like, in my country, to incorporate movement into learning and make it more fun and stay longer. I'm continuing a bit here. Also, another example of how you can use the surfaces here. It's a green screen. It's basically something you can just paint or buy very cheap. And then it's sort of a little invitation to children to do make a little movie and do something fun and experiment with what you can do through media, use of media, and how you can communicate projects and things and make it more fun and engaging and also relevant in terms of learning many ways of communicating. Also, you might not be able to have a lot of things in your different rooms, but then you might be able to create a little box with things. This one says collaboration and play. So it's created to be able to take into different classrooms as you might need it. So you can invent your own little micro tools. This one is more to help focus. So different things for yoga and for things that we also use in schools, particularly with younger kids, so that we can take these things into regular classrooms and then create, facilitate another kind of learning. Here's an example. I am from the country of Lego, so we do have quite a lot of Lego in our schools here. And this is just an example of where, like, these Lego plates are put on top of a table, so it's easy to use. And Lego is very good for, like, math learning, counting, multiplying, lots of stuff you can use it for. And you can also use it if you do a lot of things, you work on innovation and creativity. So just an example again of how you can use
it. Let me ask another question, Lena, as you're going through this. How do you get veteran teachers and principals to buy into this innovative learning environment?
Oh,
that's wonderful.
No problem at all. I've mentioned a few times that, like, rather than create and design spaces for schools, we'd rather design it with them or co-create. So we run these workshops that we call Learning Space Design Lab, and I show, like, we have different little, a lot of little bits and pieces that we bring to these workshops so that teachers can discuss learning, teaching, didactics through, like, a physical representation in a model. We've never, like, we don't need to twist anybody's arms, and I would never want to do that because it's like each school is different. So it's basically providing a tool for them to express themselves and rethink and think together collaboratively and experiment of, like, what should learning really look like in our school. And we can just see these other things coming out. So it's really changing the environments right now that we see in schools. Not to say that it's not, like, there's still sort of a leap to, like, how do you go from, like, your regular teaching situation to working in a different way, more as a facilitator, in the animator of learning, really. So there's an issue there where you need to develop your skills as a teacher, your skill set, really, and how you work as a teacher. And it needs to be collaborative, because, like, it's difficult to just be one teacher and change this. It needs to be a joint decision.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
So again, just examples of things you can easily use to help quickly change an environment. And just a few little bits. We know that, like, we have very clear indications that, like, when we have no shoes policy in schools, it really helps reduce noise and improve behavior. And people, like, children act more like they are home and they're kinder to each other. And you also get a more clean school where you can easily use the floors for lying down, sitting, and making much more spaces available to them. Also, if you can put in, like, more sort of focused lighting, like here, it creates a space right there that feels more intimate, and we can see also from research that the noise level goes down here. And it creates that so important sense of a small room. And how can we create those small rooms in our schools if we don't really have any and just have like one classroom after the other? So this is an example, like you can maybe put in a playhouse. This is a classroom where this was done. And the butterflies, it's just to not show the children's faces. Another example, very cheap, like just play tents. Very, very simple and cheap solution. But you know what they are. It's not that you're going to lose the kids if they don't get lost there. And here's an example of, if you remember earlier, I showed a corridor, a hallway, where kids could take down a carpet from the wall. So here's an example of children using that, finding their little spot that nobody would think of, where they really enjoy lying down and working on whatever work that they have to do, and having a great time together. And the funny thing is, if you put down a mat like this in a long corridor, children will like respect that as a space that where they don't interrupt. They'll be very like walk by very quietly. So that's a funny thing, and it really sort of empowers the kids and gives them choice, which they really enjoy. Also, just like very easy, cost no money at all. Like here's a girl lying in the like window, not high enough for her to fall down, or just a very, very cheap little group space, just earmuffs as this. Not because the noise level is too high, but just to indicate to other students and your teacher that you might need a little bit of peace and quiet here. Again, the students are able to personalize their learning experience and do something that works for them. It's so helpful to a lot of kids. So, and this is one of my favorite pictures, a small group room too, a girl with a cardboard box on her head. So that was the last bit of the facilitation. Like how we really want here to help students and teachers engage, be active, and co-create their learning experience. Take responsibility for their learning experience. So this moves us into the last section here of my presentation, just showing you a few examples of like what could this look like in a regular school. So this is a picture of a regular classroom that we'd see in many schools in my country. You might have other images from your country and from your schools, but this is an example of how it typically might look. So I worked at the school, and they didn't have any money. They wanted to change their learning culture. So we looked at it, and we worked with them, I think, just like on Saturday, basically, and gave them some tools and just like opened their eyes to new ways of looking at their learning environments. And then they took it from there. Let me show you here what happened. So this is like really an image of the Danish hygge, kids hanging out here, but focused, working, and doing what they need to do, but while they're like they're feeling comfortable, having a good time. And notice the light and the lamp and the soft seating. Here, again, the different spaces within spaces. We've got the lamp, and we've got a place where students can get together on the couch over on the right-hand side or in the back of the picture, where the teacher can present and give instructions, and then the student can move out and work in like in different places, it could be different stations, or just like find a place that works for them or their group. This is also what it looks like, same school. And they didn't, like you might notice here we have these like transport like over on the left-hand side. I don't know the word in English, but very, very cheap solutions, just things that they found, like recycled stuff and things they found in the basement, and just reusing things in different ways. And you can see more examples here. Very, very cheap solutions. And
so I've got to ask a question here about your, all these students are so, so well focused on these things. Is it because of the design, or is it because I'm thinking of American classrooms where, you know, you give lots of kids are all over the place in these cases.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, what like, your research
yeah, is. It's not just because of the design, but the design is a component. It's, you know, all things go together. So it's your pedagogy, how do you say it?
Pedagogy.
Pedagogy. Yeah. Thank you. pedagogy, it's your, the way you organize learning, it's the way you structure the day, the way everybody knows that this space is used for that. And when I say it's time to go to the message zone, we all go there. And I do have these little sort of markers that you use.
Uh-huh.
So there's, you know, you need to also have your sort of toolbox to go with it.
And the teacher is more of a facilitator, right? Where
yeah, absolutely. They go around and... Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then they might have different, like during the next half hour, you can do this or next 10 minutes that. And then we meet up here again.
Yep.
So you have these things and make it very clear to the kids what to do when and where and when they have choice and when they don't have choice.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
So good question. And also just this picture from the same school, very, very cheap solutions, but they so enjoy themselves, these kids. And if you look on the right hand side, just cheap blankets, which really makes it feel very homey, warm, comfortable. They feel so at home and welcomed and cared for. So they really want to give it a go also with their learning. So lots of,
and in this one, I'm just dying to know, is that a closet that you converted?
Or on the left-hand side?
Uh-huh.
No, room dividers, I think. That they just put two room dividers up. But you can use anything, really. And then some cheap IKEA stuff to sit on. There's lots of cheap IKEA stuff at that school.
That's great.
But they really managed to, like, if you look at again at how the school looked before and what it looks like now. And I just want to share with you what we hear from the students. So here's one student who drew, like, what did it look like before, and she shared what it felt like, and then after. So this is her words. Like, she said it was very teacher-led, tough and boring to sit down all day, and tough to always have to work with the same side buddy. She didn't feel she had any influence, and there's a lot of students who would always, like, try and find an excuse to go to the bathroom or sharpen their pencils, whatever they could come up with. After, and you can just see the illustration she drew on the left-hand side here. Much more varied after, and so sometimes they would have fixed seatings, other times they could choose themselves. So she experienced that she had a lot of freedom now. She had influence in the class. They were part of redesigning the classroom, and every now and then they changed and tweak it a little bit. And she's able now to collaborate with different people in her class more. She can take responsibility and make decisions herself, and also listen to how she feels and do something about it and put herself in a very constructive situation instead of feeling stuck in a chair. And as soon as she starts to move, like, you are disturbing the rest of them. So she said, like, modern, child-friendly, homey, and hugely. And I've been allowed to share that this particular girl, many teachers say, hey, we have a lot of students who are on the spectrum or have different kinds of challenges like that. And this particular girl has a lot of challenges like that, but it so helps her, that she's now able to react to how she feels and put and do something else. So we can really see how these spaces help more students thrive and focus on learning and be able to do something that doesn't disturb anybody else and where they don't get into sort of these bad cycles of like behavior and stuff. We can see it's helping, and we'd love for some research to actually look further into that. And also the students here, they say, like, the teachers are much more quiet now in these environments, which we think is, like, a really funny thing, but it's true. So, yep, that was the going through the four F's of learning space design, the way we do it. And then I just want to add the button, just stressing that make sure to bring in natural light, good air quality, temperature, the acoustics. I haven't mentioned this, but it's important. And bring nature in if you can. And also, yep, how can you design for choice and personalization? And that sense of, this is my school, I'm welcome here, I belong here, and I can sort of put my mark on that school. So, and just lastly, like one of my last slides here, we should not forget the teachers. Teachers are people too. And we want them to really feel that they're able to do great things in our school. So how can we also create environments that they love and they thrive in and that really works for them and they have a great tool at their hand? So we are, like, closing in on the end now here. So please share in the chat maybe the one thing you'd like to change in your school, the one thing that has to go, or the one thing you'd like to implement or look at. That would be like really cool to see what you might be thinking here.
Well, Lena, I had a question while they're doing that. With the different spaces in the classroom, would a teacher assign a different lesson for each space so the students are doing things in different areas and they rotate, or is it
Sometimes they do that off, sometimes not. It depends. Sometimes they integrate the subjects, but we have, our system is a little bit different than yours, where I guess that for at least elementary, you have one teacher that will take care of all the subjects, right?
Yes, and they probably do cooperative learning groups.
Yeah. So some of the teachers do that. Other teachers work in different ways, and like most of them, like they do all of like anything you can think of. They use these spaces in different ways, except for like they in this particular school I showed you, they have what they call the message zone, and then they have all these other choices that kids can use. But the message zone is where they start the day. That's where they convene. That's where they get instructions. And where they know, like, to be quiet, and just there's like real focus and intimacy in that zone. You don't have any desks that are like, or nobody's sitting in the back of the classroom because there's no back of the room anymore. So it's just different in that way, and it's much more focused in like a short little. And we know that children are not able to focus on instructions for like longer, more minutes than their age. So if they're 5 years old, like you should not give instructions that last more than 5 minutes, etc. So it's also to help teachers make learning more active for students.
Mm-hmm.
Great. So if someone wanted to get in contact with you and were interested in this, is there, are you on Twitter? Or, great.
Absolutely. I have this like last little thing here. I just want to thank you all for participating, and thank you for inviting me to do this and share what we do here in Europe. I hope some of it at least made sense, and that it maybe provided a framework for like rethinking your own learning spaces, and maybe an idea or two, or maybe something popped up. But if anyone wants to get in touch or discuss further, you can contact me on email. It's right here, or my Twitter handle. And also any feedback or any great things that you have in your schools, great stuff that you're doing, or like interesting ideas, I'd love to see it. So please reach out anytime. That would be awesome.
Well, thank you. And on behalf of NAESP, we'd like to thank you for giving us this information. On behalf of our executive director, Dr. Earl Franks, and our associate executive director, professional learning, Gail Morgan, we'd like to thank you again. And please remember to register for our Super Bowl of events. You know what I'm talking about, our 2019 NAESP Principals Pre-K the 8th Principals Conference, which is going to be in Spokane, Washington. It's going to be July the 10th through the 12th. Make sure you register for that. And again, we thank you for being with us and sharing this information for this bonus members webinar series. My name is Aaron Lurie. I'm the Director of Professional Learning here at NAESP. I'd like to thank my partner behind the scenes, Honor Feedy, for supporting us as well. We see you at the next installment of our Webinar Wednesdays coming up soon.
Just as we sort of say goodbye to each other, I just wanted to show this little bit. So just a shout out here for creating kid-friendly spaces all over the world. So really, thank you for having me here, and have a great day.
Thank you again. Bye-bye.